Welcome to this edition of Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson.
You know, anti-Semitism is a term that refers to hostility toward Jewish people in general. But there's even a more specific kind of a thing that's arisen, and it's anti-Semitism, but it's more directed at the land of Israel and Jews being in the land. If you're a secular Jew in New York, you're fine. If you're a religious Jew in Jerusalem, you're a problem.
Today on Back to Basics, Pastor Brian continues his study through the books of the Old Testament prophets. Join us as Pastor Brian concludes his teaching on Zechariah chapters 13 through 14. Now here's Pastor Brian.
Jerusalem has been destroyed more than any other city in history. It's been destroyed over and over and over and over again. But there will be no more destruction. It shall be safely inhabited. And now verse 12, listen to this. And this shall be the plague with which the Lord will strike all the people who fought against Jerusalem. So here's the description of the plague. Their flesh shall dissolve while they stand on their feet. Their eyes shall dissolve in their sockets, and their tongues shall dissolve in their mouths. Now, some have said that this sounds like some type of a nuclear weapon would cause this kind of a thing, and that is probably the case. The film, The Raiders of the Lost Ark, if you ever saw that film, when the Nazis finally get a hold of the Ark, and they're just, you know, now they've got the power and now they're going to take over the world, and they open up the Ark, and, you know, these sort of spirit types of things, you know, come up out of the Ark and start to swirl around the room. And then the next thing you know, their faces are melting. Their eyes are melting in their sockets. And I mean, it's a pretty gross picture, actually. But I think it's probably somewhat, and who knows, they might have even drawn from the description here. But whatever it is that causes it, it says here that it's a plague. Now, plagues would normally be references to sicknesses and things like that, but it could refer to something like the release of a nuclear weapon. We don't know, but we know that it's going to be a horrific situation. It shall come to pass in that day that a great panic from the Lord will be among them. Everyone will seize the hand of his neighbor and raise his hand against his neighbor's hand. So in that day, there's going to be mass confusion among all of the armies that have come to, they've come together to destroy Jerusalem and now to overthrow Jesus, but they're going to end up destroying themselves. They're going to end up in conflict with one another. Judah also will fight at Jerusalem, and the wealth of all the surrounding nations shall be gathered together, gold, silver, and apparel in great abundance. Such also shall be the plague on the horse and the mule, on the camel and on the donkey, and on all the cattle that will be in those camps. So shall this plague be. You know, it's interesting here. It says, it makes reference to the horse and the mule, the camel and the donkey. And over the years, people would often scoff at these kinds of ideas. Like, of course, this can't be legit. It can't be talking about anything in the future because, after all, horses and mules and camels and battle. I mean, that went out centuries ago, right? Wrong. People still fight that way today. In the Second World War, there were troops from the far reaches of what was then the Soviet Union when the Germans attacked, when the Germans invaded Russia and tried to overtake Russia and the battle for Stalingrad and so forth. Hordes of Cossacks who were Eastern Muslim, but yet under the Soviet Federation, they came to assist in the Battle of Stalingrad, riding on horses, and in some cases, camels. So these things, you know, my point is that, you know, sometimes people, they read stuff like this and they try to dismiss it because, oh, well, we know that, you know, these are modern times and that's that, obviously, that could never happen. Well, actually, it will happen. Now, it shall come to pass that everyone who is left of all the nations which came against Jerusalem shall go up from year to year to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, and to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. Now, let's tie another passage to this. Remember Matthew 25. Jesus, there he describes that when the Son of Man returns, all the nations shall be gathered before him, and he shall separate them. Now, these are nations. He shall separate them as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And to those on his right hand, he will say, come, blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from before the foundation of the world, so forth. To those on his left, depart from me, you workers of lawlessness. I never knew you. And so here again, everyone who is left of all the nations, so those who survive that separating of the sheep and the goats, those who survive that judgment, that they will go up from year to year to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, and to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. So Jesus is going to be reigning as King over the earth from Jerusalem. And the nations are going to make a pilgrimage to Jerusalem for the Feast of Tabernacles. Now, the Feast of Tabernacles, it's interesting that it's the Feast of Tabernacles. The feast was originally to commemorate God taking care of the Israelites as they journeyed in the wilderness. And they would, of course, journey through the wilderness in these basically in tents and booths. So after they came into the promised land to remember God's faithfulness, there was this feast that was established, and it was instituted before, but it was to look back upon how God was faithful, how God was in their midst. And so every year, still to this day, in October, Jewish people move out of their houses, people who live in Israel, and maybe other places as well, but they move out of their houses and they set up a little sort of a lean-to thing and they live in it for that time for the Feast of Tabernacles. And so it's remembering how God was with them. He was present there with them in the wilderness and took care of them. But Tabernacles was also a prophecy about the future of God dwelling among humanity. And some of you know this. You remember that great, great passage, John 1:14, and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. Or it's actually the Word became flesh and tabernacled among us. Or more commonly, a tabernacle is a tent. We don't really, we think of a tabernacle as something religious, right? You would say, yeah, I went out to the lake this past week, you know, took my tabernacle out there and we camped out. You'd never say that. You'd say,
I took my tent. But a tabernacle is a tent, but it's just a fancy word in it. And then it got sort of a religious connotation over the years. But the Word became flesh and pitched his tent among us. God came and dwelt among us. And the Feast of Tabernacles in the millennium, in the reign of Christ, will be the fulfillment of that, because the nations will come and bring their gifts to the Lord who lives among us. Tabernacles with us at that time. Now, interestingly though, it shall be that whichever of the families of the earth do not come up to Jerusalem to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, worship the King, the Lord of hosts, on them there will be no rain. So hard to believe, but there are going to be people during this time who say, you know, I'm not going. I don't want to go. Why do we have to go all the way to Jerusalem? We don't want to go this year. Forget it. We don't care. We'll go later. No rain for that people. If the family of Egypt will not come up and enter in, they shall have no rain. They shall receive the plague with which the Lord strikes the nations who do not come up to the Feast of Tabernacles. The plague is the no rain. That's what's being referred to here. So, look at verse 19. This shall be the punishment of Egypt and the punishment of all the nations who do not come up to the Feast of Tabernacles. And here's the point that I want to make. How is there punishment? How is there even resistance or rebellion? Well, it's because this is not the final state. This is not the eternal state that's coming later, where there will be no more sin or death or sorrow or crying. The former things have passed away. There will be no rebellion. There will be no conflict. There will be nothing like that. But we're not there yet. Even in the millennium, we're not there. So in the millennium, it is still possible to rebel against God. Some will. And that's why it's said regarding Jesus that he will rule the nations with a rod of iron. Now, I'm saying this because there are Christians, and they're great Christians, but they have a different view of the future, and they do not believe that there is a literal reigning of Jesus over the earth for 1,000 years from Jerusalem. They believe that Jesus will return and we will enter then just into the perfected state, permanently perfected. The new heavens and the new earth is what will happen when Jesus returns. And that view is called amillennialism, or some people say a, like atheist. We don't say atheist, so we probably should say amillennial. But it means no millennium. A millennium means 1,000. So amillennialists do not believe that there is a 1,000-year reign of Christ where he reigns over the earth sitting upon a literal throne in the historic city of Jerusalem. Amillennialists say, no, that's just figurative language. 1,000 years just means an indefinite period of time. And we know that when Jesus returns, he's bringing in the eternal state. It's all going to be new, and everything that has been will be past to never be remembered again. But the problem with that is all of these passages that talk about Jesus ruling with a rod. You don't rule with a rod if you have no possibility of rebellion. So the fact that he rules with a rod of iron is indicating that there still will be pockets of resistance and rebellion. So we can conclude from that, that's not the perfected state. The perfected state is yet ahead in the future. And so that is what is being talked about here. The nations that do not comply will receive punishment. In that day, holiness to the Lord shall be engraved on the bells of the horses. The pots in the Lord's house shall be like the bulls before the altar. Yes, every pot in Jerusalem and Judah shall be holiness to the Lord of hosts. So, no, like, ugly graffiti that defaces everything. You know, isn't it crazy how just a can of spray paint, people can just wreck the nicest things. Over by where we live, there's a really nice development that they built some years ago, and it was just finished. You know, they're just leasing out the units, and I mean, just looking at it, it looks so amazing. I remember driving by one day, and this big spray-painted thing right across the name of it, and you just think, God, just how disrespectful. But that's not going to happen. The graffiti will be holiness to the Lord. Everything's going to be glory to the Lord. You know, I'm absolutely convinced for myself, and I think for all of us, really, probably. I don't even think we have the slightest idea about the glory of God. I really don't even think we do. You know, once in a while, I find myself thinking about, like, the universe and the size of the universe and, you know, planets and stars and galaxies. And it doesn't take long before my brain just completely fries. And you're just like, how can that even be? And God made that. There's no other satisfactory explanation in my mind. But still, it is so mind-boggling. So mind-boggling. And I think that we just, maybe every now and again, we get like a little tiny glimpse. But if we did get that, man, we would just be writing glory to the Lord, holiness to the Lord. We'd be putting that everywhere, because that's exactly the truth. Glory to the Lord. Amazing. And so, everyone who sacrifices shall come and take them and cook in them, these vessels, these pots and things. And in that day, very interesting close to Zechariah, in that day there shall no longer be a Canaanite in the house of the Lord of hosts. Wow, a Canaanite. How did they get back in here? Now remember, the Canaanites were the people that the Israelites were sent into the land to move them out, to deal with them, to dislodge them from the land. And my goodness, by the time of Zechariah, you couldn't find a Canaanite if you tried. All those ancient tribes were long gone. So why does he say Canaanite? Well, notice too that it's a Canaanite in the house of the Lord of hosts. I think, I could be wrong, I don't know, I didn't read this anywhere, but I think that this is probably specifically a reference to, again, the Antichrist and all the things that had recently occurred or will have recently occurred. Because the Canaanites, the Antichrist is sort of, he's the fulfillment of all the sin, wickedness, and rebellion against God throughout all of history that there's ever been. That is embodied in him. And it started with the Canaanites in the biblical redemptive story. And so maybe that's why it says a Canaanite. But the promise is that never again will the house of the Lord of hosts be defiled in any way. So the bad news is that the world is a mess and it's getting messier every minute. The good news is the Lord is in control. And he's working out his plan. And he's going to come back in his time. And he's going to do everything he said that he's going to do. And, you know, if you sometimes wonder, is that really true? Just think about this. Think about the Jewish people. Think about the fact that they exist. No other people in all of history displaced from their homeland for 2,000 years that retained their national identity and returned to their homeland. And had it not been for the fact that God said they would, they never would have done it either, because no one else has ever done it. And think about the world. Think about what we talked about before, about Jerusalem always being that place where angst and frustration and anger kind of, you know, works its way back around to the Jewish people, a problem. Anti-Semitism always looking to raise its head. You know, anti-Semitism is a term that refers to hostility toward Jewish people in general. And there is still plenty of anti-Semitism, but there's even a more specific kind of a thing that's arisen, and it's anti-Semitism, but it's more directed at the land of Israel and Jews being in the land. If you're a secular Jew in New York, you're fine. If you're a religious Jew in Jerusalem, you're a problem. And so the negative focus is no longer just on the Jewish people. It is now on the Jewish people connected to the land and specifically to Jerusalem. So as we see these things, we just say, yes and amen. Lord, your word is true. And every bit of it's true. And all of that big picture stuff is true, but all the closer to home stuff is true as well. And so I want to live my life in a way that honors him and pleases him and glorifies him. And I know you do too. So let's do that.
For the month of March, Back to Basics Radio is offering a book titled, Is Easter Unbelievable? 4 Questions Everyone Should Ask About the Resurrection Story by Rebecca McLaughlin. With Easter just around the corner, the topic of the resurrection of Jesus will be buzzing in both private and public discussions. But many people do not even believe that Jesus was actually a historical person. So how can you help someone else in your life understand the historical reliability of the resurrection of Jesus? And more importantly, what it means for them. Well, Rebecca McLaughlin has again used her gift of using story to powerfully illustrate the truth of Christianity, and this time, she focuses on the resurrection of Jesus. She addresses 4 fundamental questions that everyone should ask when considering who Jesus is. Is Jesus' life historical? Is Jesus' death ethical? Is Jesus' resurrection credible? And is Jesus' offer desirable? In her book, Is Easter Unbelievable?, Rebecca McLaughlin will help you confront these questions in an honest evaluation to help you or someone else you know make the most informed decision you can regarding Jesus and his resurrection. Today is the day to find the hope that you've been missing. Learn today about the resurrection of Jesus and his offer of life to you. The book is Easter Unbelievable, 4 Questions Everyone Should Ask About the Resurrection Story by Rebecca McLaughlin, is our gift to say thank you for your donation to Back to Basics.
so we encourage you to call us right now at 1-800-733-6443 or visit us online at backtobasicsradio.com. We'd also like to remind you that all of our other resources are waiting for you at backtobasicsradio.com or by calling our request line at 1-800-733-6443. That's 1-800-733-6443. Our desire is to encourage you in your daily walk with God. We'll continue tomorrow with more valuable insights from Pastor Brian as we continue our series with the book of Malachi. Back to Basics is the preaching and teaching ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.